I miss a green, for example, I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
Fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Arnold Palmer is the Masters champion of 1960. He has birdied the last two holes to catch and then move ahead of Ken Venturi, one of the greatest displays of courageous golf that anybody has ever seen any place.
Up the hill.
Oh, did you ever see one like that? I think that's one of the greatest putts I've ever seen in my life.
There it is!
Can you believe it?
Dick Faldo! There it is! A win for the ages!
Is it his time?
Yes!
Well, here it comes. Oh my goodness. Oh wow. In your life have you seen anything like that?
Hello friends, I'm Jim Nantz. It's my great pleasure to welcome you to the Masters Tournament. I've heard it said before, it's a tradition unlike any other.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. It is Tuesday before Masters, and I'm joined by PGA Tour's Sean Martin, SB Nation's Brendan Porath, and the creative director for Summit Brands, Billy Draddy. Guys, welcome on.
This is groundbreaking. We're all in the same room.
It is amazing. It's going to be a whole new dynamic.
Live pod. We're sitting here in this grand Augusta house that the Draddy's gracious enough to host us with. That's a new frontier in your pod empire.
I think next step we have to be at the media center, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
do they have little pod centers yet there?
I believe they do. I don't know. You're the takesmith among us, Brendan. So.
Yeah, I went looking for that today. They have radio slots, you know, to fire off all the audio takes, but. I'm more of a man of letters.
You want to take your incendiary takes off property. You don't want to get escorted off.
The future, you know, they need to have little pod rooms.
Well, let's get phones on the golf course first, then we'll work on the pod rooms next.
Yeah, yeah. So, Masters Week, what is each of your guys' favorite Masters tradition or aspect of the Masters?
I'll go. I mean, I, it's not exactly like, you know, an underrated one. The Champions Dinner. I think that's cool. I mean, that's very obvious, but I think it's cool that the defending champion gets to set a menu. A ton of people care about what this menu is. You know, PGA Championship has one. No one cares. You know, and how often do we see like, honestly, Gary Player and Jack Nicklaus and those people in public life together anymore. We don't. Like, and you know what? We've heard them talk. They've, you know, contributed a lot to golf. And sometimes, you know, their thoughts aren't always the most original. We've heard them for 20, 30, 40, 50 years now. But like, I think, you know, not to be morose, but like, we never know how many years we have with them. And it's good to kind of, for the 1 week a year, they're all together in public view. And I think that's still cool.
If you won the Masters, what would be your champion's dinner?
Ooh, that's a good
crab
one.
Crab cakes.
I mean, obviously, we know the beverage would be Monster Energy.
You can't complain about it on Twitter. You can't complain about this on Twitter and then go straight to the Monster jokes.
I wasn't complaining. I don't know. I'd have to think about that. It'd probably be pretty basic. I'm just a fat corn-fed Midwestern boy, you know, be, you know, meat and potatoes of some sort.
It is pretty cool the years that Tiger wasn't going to play and his back was horrible that he would fly up just for that. And it shows what a big deal it is that he was, I mean, you know, talking about last year, he could barely sit and nerve pain is shooting down his leg and he still flies up to do the Masters Champions Dinner, which, I mean, to your point, shows how cool it is and what a big deal it is for guys.
Yeah, I mean, I know that's kind of an obvious one. I'm not really going off the books there, but I still, whatever. I think it's cool.
I made the phones joke, but I actually like the no phones. Like, I was walking around this morning taking some photos and just enjoying the golf course, not checking my mentions or, you know, getting texts. I like the no phones.
I'm like all in on the no phone country clubs. Like, when I get to put the phone away and I, like, you're just out there playing golf, it's so much more peaceful. You know,
I don't need to make an Instagram story of my round. No one needs to see that.
Yeah. So Billy, you've been coming here for how many years now?
I guess this will be maybe my 19th in a row, something like that.
Wow.
Yeah. My favorite is actually just getting here right as the gates open and everyone walks briskly to go put their chair out. And I kind of just walk slowly and just the procession, and it changes a little bit every year. And that's part of the fun is you see all the newness that the club brings to the event. But there's a real serenity to the grounds as the championship's going on. It's just like, there's a great feeling that everyone is here for all the right reasons, that we're about to see something great. And, I mean, the club does, I think it's the best sporting event in the world. So, to just walk in slowly and kind of take everything in is always my favorite part of it.
Sean?
Yeah, I think I have to agree with that. I did an early morning walk today. I wish the gates opened at 8. I wish that they'd opened at like 7. It would have been awesome. You know, you lose some of that good light when the gates aren't open. You can't get on.
You're
the
worried
course.
About your Instagram page.
Well, I'm using the point shoot, so I'm gonna have to take a couple extra steps. Got to upload my computer first, and then edit them, and then, you know, I can't just.
You're not worried about your story, but you're.
No, I like taking some good photos with some 2005 technology. I love underrated tradition is when like Tiger was playing, everyone's holding up these like 2005 point and shoots because they all save their cameras for this 1 week a year because they need them because you can't take your phone on the grounds.
This is like a super nerdy inside baseball one, but the thing I like is that in the media center press building, I should say, use the correct terminology, they have these like notepads for it's like the same kind of note style that like whatever Grantland Rice and Herbert Warren Wind would take when they go out on the course. And like when you assume there's no video footage of everything, it's every hole with like note slots. You know what I'm talking
it's
about,
like eight
Sean.
And a half and 11, 8.5 by 11 pad, right?
Yeah, it's like an 8.5 by 11 pad. It says like Masters on it. You know, you have each hole where you're supposed to note, you know, what happened with the shots, presuming there's no video record of it or anything like that. So that's like mega nerdy, super nerdy. So that's a cool tradition. I always grab one, go out there, and I mean, I don't pretend I'm, you know, Grantland Rice or anything like that, but I don't know. That's how I like to take notes of the round. And another cool aspect of not having your phone there, usually just plugging those notes into your phone at the other majors, but I don't know. That's a kind of off the record one that, or, you know, an underrated one you wouldn't see.
I love that the champions get to keep playing forever, because what it leads to is like Bernhard Langer a couple of years ago in contention on a Sunday, Freddie Couples making his run and getting to see like the, you know, Augusta has become a place that is tougher to compete at as at an older age, but it's still, you can still get it around there. And if you take advantage of the holes, like, that you only learn more and more and you get better at playing the golf course with age. So it's cool that these guys get to keep playing.
I mean, even like Larry Mize is 59, I think, and it's not like he's burning up the Champions Tour, but he's made 3 of the last 4 cuts.
Yeah.
I think that's a cool aspect of it. Like, you can have a tournament where like Trevor Immelman plays, but like Ernie Els can't. It's an exclusive. I mean, it's, you know, I'm not saying Andy's a big Ernie Els guy, but it's not Ernie, you know, someone who's super competitive right now, say like the 55th player ranked player in the world that wasn't otherwise exempt, but you also have Trevor Immelman. Like, that's still a cool thing, to Andy's point about all the former champs coming back.
It does make like a sudden death playoff so much more high stakes. You think about it, like, you know, Kenny Perry,
sure,
in 2009 loses. If Kenny Perry had won that, he's coming back to the Champions Center every year. He's coming and playing every year. He's playing the par three contest with his grandkids. Now, like, he's home this week, I guess. You know, and so not only did you lose the Masters and lose the title and all that, but you lost, like, the opportunity to come back every year and do all those awesome traditions. So I feel like it does add weight to, like, to the playoffs when those do happen.
So 19 years, that's a lot of time. I mean,
did you invent the short sleeve rain shirt?
No. That was the U.S. Open. It was zero restriction, but that was, of course, Payne Stewart at the U.S.
Scissors,
Open.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he
cut the sleeves off his rain jacket, and we created a little subcategory in rainwear. Thank God.
I remember my dad after that cut off the sleeves of his rain jacket and started wearing it around. He thought, if there's ever a market for short sleeve rain shirts, he's the guy. He loves them. So transitioning to this year, what's you know, Tiger's obviously the big storyline. What's the storyline you're watching going into this year that you're excited to see unfold?
I wonder if people are more excited for a Tiger Phil showdown or like a Tiger JT showdown. Like, I feel like Tiger, I think the bigger thing, I know like the intergenerational thing is huge, but I'd be more excited based, especially all this buddy buddy stuff we're seeing. They're playing practice runs together, but like we could see a Tiger Phil showdown, which we've wanted for decades. And so I think that's the one really gets me more than even like a Tiger JT or Tiger Spieth.
So does Tiger have to be part of the equation?
No.
Doc Redman can be in there.
I think the Rory Phil thing is fantastic. I think obviously Tiger is like the elephant in the room, but and again, that's why this, you hear like Nance and others say this is the most anticipated Masters ever, and we kind of always come to the Masters with a little extra enthusiasm and maybe get a little hyperbolic about where it stands beforehand. But like, he's not out of line there. There's so many things to choose from. I think that the cross generational thing is, as Sean alluded to, with Phil and Rory, and then like the amount of history between on the line, if you had that, you know, Phil, what's the four jacket club? It's Tiger, Arnie, and Jack. I mean, and Phil has talked about this at length with his like eyes bulging and grinning. Like, I mean, three is great. I'm Jimmy DeMeritt, Sam Snead, but four, like that is a, you know how Phil gets all worked up. And with Rory, obviously, whatever, six guy to win the career slam. I think like if you got, and they've had moments of, I don't know, tension or needling in the past, certainly at Valhalla, Ryder Cups, 24, Glen Eagles, Phil, you know, made a joke about him suing Graham McDowell. So I think if you got Phil Rory with the career slam versus the four jacket club and oldest to win, like that would be just incredible. And the personalities that they are, you know, the media just loves them.
I don't know if anyone remembers the tiny spats of golf better than you do. I totally forgot about the Phil commented Glenn Eagles about Rory suing Graham McDowell, but now I totally remember and it brings it back. But you're always good for those tiny little spats and press conferences.
I always, you know, I try to make mountains out of molehills. It's a member of the fake news, you know. I gotta all these little needles, I gotta make a big deal. So
Billy,
I'm excited for to see Tiger and where he ends up, and for everyone to see just how far behind the curve he really is. I mean, he hasn't won anything yet, and we're talking about a major, you know, and the reason why we call him majors is because it's so difficult to win at, and all he's done is placed up until now. And so you add on the anticipation, the strong field, plus the fact that he hasn't done anything yet. You know, so I'm excited to see just how far back in the field that he's going to end up. I mean, that's the way I think about it.
I think that his driver's been the issue with his comeback. It's the only club that's kept him out of it. And of all the majors, Augusta's the place where the driver means the least in terms of accuracy, which
but,
is what
but
it's
still means something. I mean, there's not as much width as there once was.
Where is he going to hit it on one? That's a,
but when he was winning, it was his putter
that
was winning everything and keeping him in championships and making him the greatest player that he ever was, you know. Mm-hmm. And he's not where he was at that time either. So, you know, and the one thing about this course is the greens, they get everybody, you know. So If he was putting like he did 10 years ago, I would be a lot more excited for him.
It's interesting today. He's talking to, I think Shackelford asked him about bent, you know, it's been 2.5 years since he played on bent grass or, you know, played consistently on bent grass. He's been on Bermuda and obviously on the West Coast. And then also I thought one thing that was, I took away from that is press conference was the uneven lies. He's like, I've just been playing like flat Florida courses. I've been, you know, he's like, I haven't played on a bunch of uneven lies. And obviously he smoked one from 13 on a handing lie today. That was like, you know, it was beautiful, incredible shot. I'll remember, you know, for the rest of the week, no matter what happens, just on top of the flag and tapped it in for eagle. But I thought that was something to keep an eye on is like, I've been playing kind of flat golf, for at least in this run up. And this is a little change, obviously the bent grass. And then we always hear about how, you know, you can't tell how much undulation, how much, you know, elevation change there is on Augusta on TV. Obviously it's everywhere. It's significant and extreme. And it makes you a little uncomfortable. You remember Jordan Spieth actually, how
he has a great quote over here at Capitol about how uneven lies make him more athletic and he's less technical.
He's less technical. Like someone, he was at Kapalua. No one's thinking about this stuff. And he's like, I play well here because like Augusta, and I mean, one of the rare times Kapalua and Augusta are probably thrown in the same sentence, but he's just, because there's so much elevation change, you're on the side of a mountain. Not everything is just this flat, perfect, like robotic kind of golfing machine DeChambeau, one plane swing.
You know, the John Deere has some of the most uneven lies on tour.
Is that
true?
You
know who won at the John Deere?
Jordan Spieth.
And?
Zach Johnson.
Bryson.
No, Bryson. That's true.
And Bryson was contending as an amateur here, lest we not forget.
Right. So, Andy, what do you make of that? The uneven lies thing and the bent. Like,
I think
does
the
bent
thing is overrated real quick. You're a resident Midwesterner.
The bent grass is like the easiest grass to play on in the world.
It's the best part.
Yeah.
Like, so there's no grain. Everybody's always like, which way is grain? There's no grain in bent. I grew up playing bent. Like, I never once thought about grain until I got to Florida.
It's basically saying I'm going to have to transition to putting the best putting surfaces I've been on since I came back.
Yeah. Tiger's like, yeah, you just... It doesn't bounce anywhere. I have to worry about grain. It doesn't. It goes exactly where I.
Bent grass is the greatest grass in the world to putt on. Yeah. So, you know, and I think uneven lies is total factor. What it does is it separates the men from the boys. Like, you can't be a pretender with your irons and hit good shots off uneven lies. Like, the greatest iron players play well at Augusta year in, year out because they're the best. That's where it separates it. In the golf course, it asks you to hit spectacular world-class shots time after time to make birdies. It's why we see these big swings on the back nine, especially is the golf course just over and over again asks you to hit this great shot. If you hit it, you're going to get a great look at birdie and you're probably going to score really well. But if you don't, that's when, you know, the fun starts and you got, you know, it's tough to, you have to hit a great shot to make a four. It's such a position golf course. If you're in position, you can attack it, but you still have to hit a great shot. If you're out of position, you have to hit a miraculous shot to make that birdie. So with that, if you go down the list of the guys that have played the best at Augusta over the years, they're all exceptional iron players. And if you look at this current generation, who are the best Augusta players? Phil, can't drive it. I mean, one of the worst drivers. He's probably the worst driver of the golf ball of the 20 greatest players in the world of all time. You've got Jordan Spieth. You know, led the tour in strokes gained approach last year. Tiger Woods is the greatest iron player ever. I mean, you keep going down the list. Justin Rose, exceptional iron player. Like Paul Casey, great iron player. Like these guys, they're there for a reason. I can't believe Sergio, how nobody cares about the defending champion. And it's not like it's Danny Willett. It's not like it's Trevor Immelman. It's Sergio Garcia.
I mean, that's just that's poor Sergio. You know, he caught it on a year that's whatever. Tiger hasn't been here for 2 years and Phil's won and Rory's won and all these things have happened in the Q1, the first quarter, that, you know, the most notable thing is Sergio named his daughter Azalea.
It's tough to find like the follow-up storyline on Sergio, because for so long it was Sergio hasn't won a major.
Sure.
And now it's like, well, Sergio's really good and he's got a major. He's got everything. I mean, he's got a major, so we don't really talk about that. He's married, so we don't talk about his love life. You know, like all we can talk about Sergio is he's really, really good, but that's not a like good take.
So I think actually for Sergio, it takes the pressure off him.
Totally. Oh, I mean, I totally agree, but I think that's why he's flying.
He couldn't ask for better conditions to try and defend his title.
And
I mean,
playing well. Like he played well at the match play. His daughter was born like days before the match play. Yeah. And
he's not even
great.
In the discussion with all these big names. Yeah. No one's even saying it. So, I mean, I think he's in great shape.
His last three starts, T7th at the Mexico WGC Mexico, 4th at Valspar, and he made it to the round of 16 at Austin.
With his wife about to give birth, and then days after his wife does give birth. So, like, he's playing well enough that he played great while handling all those distractions.
And he won the Singapore Open. Don't forget about that. He's already won this year. Big, big time. Spieth couldn't win the Singapore Open a couple of years ago. Remember that? Threw off his whole year.
Yeah.
They sent him out to Singapore and he could never.
Chasing dollars.
He was exhausted the rest of the year. But Sergio won it.
All right. So, tee times came out today. What are the tee times you're watching? We're going to exclude Tiger from this.
I was a little disappointed with the Tiger pairing real quick. I thought that they kind of eased him into it. It kind of reminded me in 2010, they put him with KJ and Matt Kuchar. I don't know. Nothing against Mark Leishman, great year last year. Nothing against Tommy Fleetwood, two of the best players in the game. But I don't know. There's that pizzazz to put him with a Spieth or a Rory or just with someone else, another epic name. And I feel like this kind of – I was surprised by who they paired him with. We'll put it that way.
What are you looking for? Underrated tee time? A tee time I like?
Which one are you most excited about?
You know what I love? I love the Fred couples, Houghton Lee and Joaquin Niemann trio. I mean, that's incredible. There's just storylines for days.
He's a global ambassador.
Yeah. We've got Asia and South America and like Mr. America, Freddie couples. And they all hit it different. You know, Houghton and Niemann, obviously, they destroy the ball. Couples kind of just has that old man game to get around, you know, obviously doesn't hit it as far. Like, I think that's like loaded with all sorts of storylines. I'm pretty excited. They put champions or amateurs all play with a former
first timers. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that trio.
There's the traditional Masters champion, USAM champ and US Open champ, but with Brooks out, Justin Thomas fills that role. So Sergio and Justin Thomas is a good twosome. And I don't know what we'll see from Doc Redman. He made the cut at Bay Hill, but sometimes an amateur plays well. It's a cool story. But I think Sergio and Justin Thomas together is pretty sweet, and I like that one.
Brendan, I just met you. I'm not trying to one-up you. But I actually like the Sandy Lyle, Siwoo Kim, who are here as a great conversationalist out there, and Doug Gim pairing. I mean, I don't know Sandy Lyle personally, but I hear he's a little bit salty. And you put him with Siwoo Kim and Doug Gim right after. Here's the lineup: the Zach pairing, the Tiger pairing, the Sergio pairing, the Bubba pairing, the Reed Hoffman pairing, the Horschel pairing, and then boom, Sandy Lyle with Siwoo Kim and Doug Gim. He could get thrown off the grounds. I mean, I do not know him personally, but I hear he's salty. I think you put it with those two guys that he can't really air anything out with, he's going to be an accident waiting to happen.
If only you could add Monty in there.
Yeah, yes, exactly. A little cross-British rivalry. Yeah, I think that would be great.
I think this is kind of a cop-out. It's a big-time pairing, but the Phil Mickelson, Ricky Fowler, Matt Kuchar pairing, something that is crazy is that this crop of majorless. There's no like really great player that without a major. Like, I'm sorry, like I'm not putting Ricky Fowler in the same conversation as Sergio or like Lee Westwood even, or like, because Ricky, he's won what, 7 times in his career?
If you're counting international, it sounds about right.
7,
and those are two big European.
Sergio had 30. I mean, and you know, Matt Kuchar, he's been a really regular contender. He's probably the other guy that you could consider the best player without a major. And over the last 3 years, we've just seen this flurry of first-time major winners. So that we've depleted the stock of great players without a major. But they're playing with the guy that was the greatest player without a major for the probably the longest time outside of Monty.
Speaking of best players out of major, I do like the Hideki and Paul Casey pairing along with Patton Kizzire. Mm-hmm. I feel like Paul Casey, a little under, not maybe not under the radar, but a good Masters pick. He's played well here the last few years, won Valspar. Hideki is always plays well here. Been a little slow start for my guy, but
I got to ask you, can Hideki win?
He is he's capable of winning. Can I love when he was number two in the world rankings and people would ask that question and guys would look, they're like, yeah, I mean, he's literally the second best player in the world.
Did that get asked at all?
I don't think so.
Favorite Twitter account, Can Hideki Win, tweeted it. Someone, or he responded to someone who said that the Shabankar Sharma questions today were the Hideki questions of.
That's true. That's a great point.
Shabankar Sharma is a big deal, man.
There was.
21 years old.
There was a Sharma theme through everyone's press conference. Everyone got asked about Sharma.
Who's more important in terms of international? Is it Hao Tong Li from China or Sharma from India?
I mean, I think you're asking questions above our pay grade. You're getting into geopolitics.
I think those are both two tough countries because there's so many things conspiring against the larger populace playing golf. You know, Shubhankar Sharma could win the Masters, but what is there? There's like seven golf courses in India and they're all private, or, you know.
I think they should do a battle of Bighorn pay-per-view with Sharma against Hao Tong Li. It'd be like the most watched event of all time.
Put it on ESPN Plus, maybe a little over-the-top content.
No, the Ocho. It's got to go on the Ocho. Ocho needs that comment.
Bighorn, or should we pick a better venue?
Well, yeah, it wouldn't be Bighorn. We could do it out in at that course in India, the Hero course.
Gary Player special.
Yeah. I actually love that course. It's like so egregious that I enjoy it.
Completely agree.
It's like playing at Disney World.
It's not subtly bad. It's in your face bad, and you can enjoy it for that reason.
It went so far that it's good.
Oh, yeah, exactly. But one thing I like about the Masters is they don't acquiesce to the television demands and the fan demands of like, we need Tiger, Phil, and Rory all together. You get that at the other majors.
Well, they did stack those feature groups pretty good. If you look, I felt like the tee time.
I understand, they
don't have as deep of a field though.
Right,
it's a small field.
They give you Tiger, and you're upset because he's playing with Leash and Fleetwood. Like you're not upset.
Upset that he's playing with two other top 20 players in the world.
But they never kind of. I mean, PGA obviously they put the three major winners together. But like a lot of they usually give you the big guns all together. Whereas Masters will kind of like a big gun, kind of like a top 20 player, and then maybe an amateur or a lesser guy.
I mean, just give me his Genesis Open pairing of him and JT and Rory. Yeah,
I mean that's,
we've seen it, I guess, already. But come on,
that's big tour just trying to get like over the top subscriptions for PGA Tour Live. That's a business move. Masters, like, they don't need to dabble with that.
Can we talk about Phil's outfit today in the practice round? The dress shirt?
I'm not the expert here on this.
We'll give the floor to you. It's all yours.
I don't know a lot about this stuff, but I can give you what I do know. Okay, and that is that Rene Lacoste in 1930 stopped wearing woven shirts to play tennis because people decided that knit shirts were more comfortable and actually truly performed better. So the fact that Phil says they're stretchy, meaning his woven shirts, you know, I mean, my boxer shorts, my old boxer shorts were stretchy too, but now I've got on knit boxer shorts and it's like almost like stealing. I mean, it should be against the rules. It feels so good. So if that's what Phil's reason for it is because it's stretchy, I'm not buying it. It sounds like there's something else behind it.
He didn't really have a great answer for it. Yeah, what did he say? Stretchy, yeah. Comfy.
I liked it. I wanted to try it. It was stretchy.
Yeah, he needed more. He needed a better description and a more prepared answer coming in for that.
I went to ESPN, and the photo on the front page was Tiger in his blade collar T-shirt. Next, who looked like he just got done with like a workout. Next to Phil in his button-down dress shirt, who looked like he just got off the office.
Yeah, like a dad standing at a Little League game or something like that, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean,
long sleeves with like the cuffs. It had his logo on the cuffs. It's just, I was
holding the Yeti.
I walked up and I couldn't. I walked up to the 10th tee at 8:30 this morning. I'm like, got my coffee, trying to get in the flow. I'm looking for Tiger more than anything. And then all of a sudden, Phil. There, I was like, wait, why is he wearing long sleeves? Like, wait, why is it? It's got that pattern. And then I whip around the front and I see it's buttoned down all the way. It took me like 10 minutes to figure out what he was wearing. And then I get back, because you have no phone, I get back to the press center and it's obviously all the rage. It's like, what the hell is he wearing?
I don't know. Also, he saved it for a big moment, the practice round with Tiger. He knew all eyes were going to be on him today, and so he decided, this is my statement I'm going to make with my fashion today.
And just with the glove and the pants, it was just a very odd ensemble, but that's what we expect, I guess, from Phil at this point.
What's the worst Masters look of all time? I mean, there's been some all-timers.
DJ loves his Phil's Silver Surfer outfit.
He looked like the Tin Man.
Yeah, it was gray on gray. I'm not a huge fashion guy, but I do know that gray on gray is not a great look.
We're talking about fashion and then different, like, making judgments when we're actually in the room with the expert. So
I'm going to reserve it for this year, actually, because I think the blade collars are actually the worst that I've seen. You know, yeah. The fact that they call them collars is completely incorrect. It's a collar band that then a collar is attached to. You know, that's what they're wearing, a shirt with a collar band. And of all the people that I thought would kind of put a halt to it, I thought Augusta was the group that would say, no, we're sorry, that, you know, you have to have a traditional shirt on. But they didn't, and I guess that's okay. But I truly think they look ridiculous.
You're in good company on that day. We've been railing against this now for more than a year, right? I mean, they're offensive. They look like you should be going down Washington Road to Planet Fitness or something and getting a quick lift in. And, you know, Billy Payne was asked about this last year. It was my favorite moment, maybe of the week. Somebody asked Billy Payne, like, Chairman, what do you think of these Nike shirts? You know, it's not a collared shirt. And he kind of like, it's like, I'm not familiar with what you're referring to. And they like moved on. But the moment between that question and waiting for the answer was like one of my favorite moments of the week. It's a legitimate question, is it not?
It is.
I think if you're some like 15 handicap and you show up at a course that requires a collared shirt, they're probably telling you to go home.
Exactly. That's why I'm so surprised that I mean, they had a year to, I guess, they've covered it. They think it's okay, which to me, I liken it to Paul Goitis wearing a mock turtleneck. You know, I think I think good looks will prevail, and people realize that, you know, putting a collar on actually looks better. It does serve a function. It blocks the back of your neck from the sun. So I think we'll be able to spot all the Nike guys in the airport, because they'll all have sunburned back of necks after they miss the cut.
One of my favorite looks is when Day pairs the blade collar with his Kevlar vest.
Oh, I mean, a Kevlar vest / Joe West behind the plate. Look, you know, he looks like he's ready to call balls and strikes and some of that stuff. But that's the problem, is like, I've said this before, I generally don't mind Nike. I get a lot of stuff for my kids that's Nike. I get some other stuff for myself that's Nike. But Nike golf tends to offend my sensibilities. But I think... Did you guys know, like, Tiger's blade collars are like a little different? His shirts seem like different than like the Rory ones and the Day ones. I don't know if he's got like a different, maybe it's just the way it's tailored, but they're like baggier. Like, he was at the press conference.
In the press conference, he was like hanging down. Yeah. It was almost like an undershirt.
Yeah. Pull it up, because like the V was going up into like his Adam's apple, and you have to like readjust it and pull it back down. I don't know. It's a lot of fashion talk. I'm not an expert.
Yeah. That's just called poor fitting. Either he has the wrong size on or it just doesn't fit him well. But
Billy, scripting's become really big, and I feel like the last 5 years everybody puts it out there. What's the key to good scripting? And
I think, you know, from a brand standpoint, it's being able to remember what they were wearing, so that, you know, when you make it to your pro shop or your retail venue, you can resurrect what was out on the course. So to me, that's always consistency. I think, you know, I think the people that either have a Sunday shirt or something like that, that's always, it's memorable. And it, I think just consistency is the best. If you're sending a message, just send one message.
The one movement I did not like, though, was when staff would have their entire team in the same outfit. So you'd have like two guys from the same company wearing the same exact thing, looking like they were going to go line up for batting practice or something.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think you can stay to consistency, but have variance within guys. I think whatever a guy wears should match his personality for sure. You know, and all the brands that are in this, you know, kind of scripting game have enough product that they could do that.
The scripting, I mean, it's like a cottage industry now. You know, they've really, how old is the phenomenon? What would you say? It's like a decade now?
Probably, I mean, it's a byproduct of our content environment. We just need more content.
And more, so, mostly Nike started probably, and then TaylorMade Adidas.
It probably started with Tiger, and then it's just trickled down to more and more obscure players.
So this week, Chez Reavie got a scripting release. You know that? There's some people who like kind of like try to figure out like, well, and I'm not.
Could somebody just get him a hat that fits his head?
It's just interesting how like what's the last frontier of who gets scripting?
What's his company? I guess I get that if you're like Peter that. Miller. If Chez Reavie is your one guy. I mean, you got to do it, right? It's your big, it's your Super Bowl for whatever your brand is. If a guy is wearing your stuff in the Masters,
what kind of coverage are you expecting out of that?
I did a Masters scripting search on Twitter before this, and popped up Robert Streb with PGA Tour apparel, Masters scripting from 2016. I mean, this stuff lives for a long time.
You're getting up in Martin's kitchen with PGA Tour apparel and Streb. That's like where he lives.
I would honestly think that Streb would dress himself. I'm a little bit surprised by that.
How does it work? Does the player have any input in this?
I think every deal is different. You know, in my experience, you put together a script and you send it, you know, to the event and. You know, in some cases they wear it, in some cases they don't. You know, it's it all depends on the deal and how I think each apparel deal with each player is probably a little bit different. So, you know, in some cases when I worked with Tom Watson, if he didn't want to wear something, he just didn't wear it, but he's Tom Watson. So, you know, you just said it's okay. And so I would assume that, you know, with some of the bigger companies where the money is really it is tied to what this guy's wearing in the event. They have to wear it. So,
I mean, what's like the exposure, like of a day at the Masters versus, you know, the other 48 events. You know, I mean, I assume it's pretty substantial that if you're signed or you're under contract, unless you're say Tom Watson, Tiger, Rory, things like that. I mean. You need to kind of get on board with the Masters plan and their mark. Because I assume, I mean, I'm not Darren Rovell, but I assume like the marketing opportunity for, you know, an hour of Masters coverage is equal to the other 48 events. I don't know. So I think you got to get on board.
Yeah. You got to be a team player. What at a regular event, do they just get a pick from?
Yeah. You have a seasonal wardrobe that you give them, and it'll rotate over the course of a month. You know, they don't wear anything twice. So it's less rigid than with, you know, when Saturday and Sunday come along for the Masters, you want to be knowing what your guy's going to be wearing.
Speaking of twice, Tiger's been in that same grotesque, like pink. Gradient to gray, you know, going from like the like left shoulder down to the right shoulder at least twice in this comeback. Because I mean, it's a shirt you can't forget, but he wore it at the Valspar. Hero. What?
Valspar.
Yeah, he wore it at Valspar, but he wore it at the Hero too. I mean, it's a shirt you never forget, but he's definitely worn it at least twice. You figure like just a plain navy or something, like you could wear that multiple times, but this is one you can't wear it twice in the, you know, same time frame of a year, but he already has.
So, picks, who you guys got, predictions,
For what? Low AM, low Aussie,
best scripting. Low...
Well, we're going. We're gonna stay mainstream.
I forgot
today.
We're talking about a golf tournament here.
Yeah, yeah.
We got pretty far off the. Off the radar.
We did get off the rails there, but we're reining it back in.
I kind of enjoyed it, to be honest with you. How many podcasts are you gonna listen to? I'm gonna go on another divergence here. How many podcasts are you gonna listen to that are just talking about picks, the course, Tiger being back? I enjoyed talking about collars and scripting. That was more fun than the usual content. You gotta stand out and be
when
distinct.
The golf media zigs, the fried egg zags.
Yeah, that's the point. You gotta be distinct. Add value. I don't need to hear any more about Tiger's, you know, strokes gained, this and that. I'd rather talk about his collar.
He hasn't won in a blade collar.
Is that true?
That might be a big storyline.
I don't think they existed in 2013.
Yeah, yes. Never won in a blade collar.
That's true.
He overcame the mock turtlenecks, though. He had some good years in the mock turtlenecks.
Yeah, that was his sweet spot, was the mock turtleneck years.
How did the mock turtleneck come of being?
It was in the 70s, and it was really hot out, and a guy was wearing a turtleneck, and he was about to win an event, and he cut off the sleeves, and all of a sudden he had a short sleeve mock. No, I actually have no idea.
The names of these things fascinated me, like, mock, like, all right, we got this thing, it's kind of like a turtleneck, but it's not. What are we going to call it? I guess, you know, kind of a mock, sure, but like, we've got this collar, I guess a blade, but it's not really a blade.
And I mean, a mock turtleneck sounds like something that Uncle Eddie would wear in Christmas Vacation, right? You know, that dickie, you know, it's that's kind of like a mock turtleneck. You
there's
know?
Nothing, there's a collar, or there's no collar, there's no blade. Why is it a blade collar?
Something I noticed watching all those old Masters was how a few guys wore hats. Back in the day.
Yeah.
Remember when Rory didn't wear the hat at Hazeltine? That was awesome.
Yeah. I think we got to get rid of hats. But that's where all the money is. Yeah.
I noticed they were making them take them all off.
Well, and it looked like they were making them run a wet comb through the hair because they all looked slightly like they had done a little bit with their hair to avoid hat hair.
Usually those press conferences, they keep them on, I think.
Phil looked beat up. He looked tired.
Phil, there were some grays in there for sure.
I love the shaggy hair. I don't know. He looked great. The shaggy hair, the button down. I love disheveled Phil. It's got the whole like just mad scientist vibe.
Yeah. So you guys don't want to say reveal your picks.
I mean, I think I really like Rose. That's very trendy.
Yeah, I'm joining that. Jumping on that bandwagon. I think it's like.
I think Spieth could do it. I don't know.
You do?
No matter how he plays at Houston, I mean, the week before, he plays well here. I mean, he's played four times. He's had the 54-hole lead three times, and the other time he was two shots back. He always plays well here.
That's not like...
And everyone's like, oh, he's playing horrific. And like, yeah, he missed the cut at Valspar where he played really bad, but he had like four straight top 20s before that. Like his bad, he was hitting it so good that his bad putting was still, he was still finishing top 20.
I am for sure a Rose guy. I know I hate how mainstream it's become, but he's gone T2nd, T6... T2nd, obviously, last year. I think he's playing well. He's been playing well since the end of 2017. He's a ball striker, like Andy alluded to. Knows every position to be in on this course. I think, like, if you were to ask me, you know, of the top 10, 15 players in the world, who is most likely to at least be in the hunt or be around, I think it would be Rose. Of course, like, who's the most likely to shoot, like, 66, you know, 70 and win by like four, probably not Rose, probably like say Justin Thomas. But you're gonna ask me like who can I bank on being there, like in the top 5 to 7 players and one of the last tee times on Sunday, I go with Rose, and that's just where, you know, that's why I'm gonna take him. I think he has the best chance to be there.
Yeah, I mean, I think he hasn't finished outside like the top 20 in like the last decade or something.
Yeah, I mean, I think his worst finish since 2011 is T25.
Yeah, top 25. I think he hasn't finished outside the top 25. And
just automatic. Decade.
So,
I like Rory with a recent victory under his belt. I think he really likes his golf course. I can remember watching him play this golf course thinking that, you know, he wasn't going to lose this thing for a couple of years. And he did, but... I like the fact that he's got a recent W, and I like how much he plays well at this golf course. So I like Rory.
He sounded good in his presser. He was talking about how, you know, because Augusta National, we talk so much about how experience and missing it in the proper places is so important. And he was kind of talking about how that had gotten him into this very conservative mindset. And so he'd get on the grounds and he would be too, like he said, I'd give the golf course too much respect. And he said, this year, I'm just going to try and go out and play more aggressively. And I mean, that's what Rory has to do. You know, we see him when he's playing his best, he's shooting final round 64s to win at Bay Hill. And I was like, his final round scoring average in his stroke play wins on tour is 66.7, which is nuts. So
he just has to get, it seems to me that he has had trouble avoiding like the one bad, like his bad round needs to be 72.
Oh, totally.
Not 74, 75. That it, cause he's been shooting, you know, he's finished in the top 10 ton, but it's like he's never been in contention in those rounds because an early round 75 or that, you know, 77 on Saturday and when Spieth won, like he just hasn't avoided the disasters. And just, it's the key to Rory's always keeping the momentum going with those par saves because, like, he's a guy that I really feel like has, like, you know, he needs that momentum to keep going to, like, he's not, but we'll see. I think I've heard he's been talking to Faxon more, so.
They played nine, I think, last week.
Uh-huh.
And that's last year he was talking, I think he was being a little bit half-joking, but last year he left and he's like, hey, at least I didn't have any nines in the 40s this week. That's progress.
That's why I like him though. He shoots a 40 and then like comes in like 32. You know, he's just I don't know. He's got, what did he have, 40 on his, in somewhere in his card in the preceding like 2 or 3 years at the Masters?
Like six of his past 8 Masters, he's had a score of 76 or higher.
So, what did you think about his line today that he needs to be more aggressive? He's talking about, like, I mean, 2 and 3. He's like, I got to put on Thursday morning. I want to put, you know, numbers up on the board.
I loved it. But it doesn't, the only problem with that, that might not be the year that that pays off. It's going to be colder. It seems like there's a cold front coming in Wednesday. It's going to rain Wednesday, which always gets people excited about Rory's chances. But yeah, it seems like
for that a couple of years ago.
You what?
I remember I was going to take Spieth and then it rained and I was like, Rory.
Everyone falls for that. Yeah.
But I think it's going to be cold and hard and firm. I mean, it's not going to be a year where guys are challenging 270.
I'm taking JT. I think this is going to be the coronation of JT as the best player in golf.
Back-to-back majors.
Yeah. I think he's the best player in the world. He's good at everything. Great short game, great iron player, drives the ball really far, and can really putt. And I think this is the week where it all comes together. He's played pretty well here in his 2 appearances. Not great, but when you look at everything you want at Augusta, he's got it. And last year he played a really good round, one of the rounds. But I think this is the year for JT. You guys got any sleepers? Anybody you're going to surprise?
We talked about his pairing kind of being a rough draw earlier. I like Berger a lot. I think he's in the positive on all the strokes gained numbers. His 2 starts, I think it's like 37th is his worst appearance. This is his third start. I think he was 20th.
He's top 10, top 7. I think he finished T7th as a rookie.
Yeah, so I think like he can be long enough when he wants to be. His odds, it's more like an odds play. He's like he was like 100-1 when I was looking at him. It seemed really high given the talent and past performance. And he's been fine this year. There's been no weakness in his game. He's in the positive on all the strokes gained metrics. I think Berger's odds are a little off.
I feel like Oosthuizen will just finish top 5 because he just does that. He does nothing all year, and then he comes to a major and finishes in the top 5.
Billy, you're going with Sandy Lyle, right?
Yeah, him and Angel Cabrera. I always like, he's always my dark horse.
Angel's a bad pick. He shot 77 in the Monday qualifier for Houston. So.
Yeah, well, he
Monday qualifier.
He had to try to Monday qualify for Houston.
He was flying up from Argentina, probably. You know, that's...
Even when he's won, he's been a long shot. So the fact you're saying that he might not play well, I'm happy about that.
Worst ranked player to ever win the Masters?
At the time? I don't know.
So, yeah. Also, don't forget Ted Potter. Augusta favors left-handers, so you heard that here first.
He's worried about the par 3 contest.
Yeah,
he wants
to
win.
That went at the first
that he might
contest.
Win, which would jinx him on the regular one.
No, he'll break that.
He's defending
Ted Potter, first par 3 contest to win the Masters.
He's defending par 3 champion. His last appearance, he won.
All right, I like Cantlay. Let's get
That's
in
not a sleeper. Go.
All right, I'll go deeper. I'll go. Oh. I'm going. Well, is Bryson a sleeper?
Sure, I'll take that.
Bryson. I actually think Bryson could win.
I agree with that. I was waiting for Brendan to bring up an artist joke, and I was going to pipe in that Brendan would actually be, or that Bryson would actually be a good pick, but Brendan.
I mean, I was between him and Berger. I mean, it's hard. I have an unrequited love for Bryson. So
Bryson played well at Bay Hill. Played well here when he's an amateur.
He's going to go full knicker soon.
Bring it. He should.
Yeah. All right. Overrated, underrated.
Oh, gosh.
Golf shoes.
As a golfer or a...
golfer.
As a golfer?
Yeah.
I think underrated. I think... I kind of enjoy the new era of, you know, different styles and comfort, and it's not so rigid as it used to be, you know, with the saddle shoes. So I think they're underrated.
I think overrated. We've gotten way too far away from spikes of any kind. Like, these plastic ridges just aren't doing it for me. We're basically wearing sneakers.
I mean, I support golf shoes because I truly like them. I run the spectrum from what you like is what I like, which is you want the most comfortable pair of shoes that are sneakers that you can play golf in. And I love that. But I also have a pair of like $600 Benchmade tassel kilty shoes, which I think are the coolest things on the planet. And I actually like playing in them because they're handmade shoes and they actually just feel great on your feet. You know, they're really well made shoes. And I think if you're going to have to wear a traditional golf shoe, that's the way to go.
I'm going way overrated. I don't think spikes are necessary.
Sam Snead played barefoot.
Yeah, I've come to the realization that I play better without spikes.
He also had 5-inch toes, though. He could grab into the ground with his toes. Wow. Just kidding. You guys believe me. That's how content rich you guys are. You guys actually believe me.
Overrated, totally underrated, false. Amen Corner.
The holes or the name?
The holes.
I'm going to say overrated only because I think what they did to 11 was a travesty, and I'm 13. I'm not sure what they're going to do with that. So I think I'm offended by 11. I wish they had kept it. Those trees on the right just need to go.
I mean, it's hard to say it's underrated. Right, I mean, it gets like more pub and praise than any stretch of holes in the world. So I guess
what about the bear trap?
It's just snake pit. The snake pit.
It ushered in the era of naming holes.
Yeah, ushered in 100 years ago, 75 years ago. I think it's overrated because, oh God, that's. I mean,
it hurts to say a little bit, but
sure.
Yeah,
sure.
I'm with you.
It can't possibly be underrated.
It's actually the 50th anniversary of the naming of Amen Corner.
Okay.
I heard someone asking questions about it in the press. That's why.
Gotcha.
If something's perfect, can it be overrated?
Wow.
Because I think that's the perfect name. I really do. I think it's the perfect name. And when you nail it, people can talk about it a lot, but it's only because they nailed it. You know, nothing else has had the teeth that Amen Corner has. And I think it's right on, and I love it. And I love it when they start mentioning the broadcast. You get excited because you know the fun part's coming up. So.
And I said that, and it is the first place you head when you get on the property.
Yeah.
You go right there. I mean, there's nothing cool in that spot. And then especially if you get to play Augusta, like getting onto 12 is
the best.
Otherworldly, because that's the one spot that you can't go. Or
yeah, you can't see. The 13th You've never seen it. Yeah, it's. I think it's the whole thing is, and I'm going to sound Disney-like, it's magical. It's awesome. So I love Amen Corner.
I don't like
just
my own
change
take.
My opinion.
I might rescind my take.
Yeah.
Oh,
so. I'm
a trained designer. I was born a salesman.
All right. So most underrated menu item at Augusta.
I'm going to go pimento cheese. I think it's been a bad few years for pimento PR, and I love pimento. So I think pimento, or maybe I got the question wrong. I think pimento is underrated. It got overrated for a while, and then it just got bashed down and beaten to oblivion. So I think pimento needs to kind of be brought back up to its proper space.
If the Masters menu board was a stock exchange, you would be buying pimento.
Pimento got pummeled. The pimento bubble burst, but now, yeah, buy low, and it's back on the way up.
I think you can't. I mean, you can't overrate the biscuits, the chicken sausage biscuit. I could sit there and have like 25 of those. If I, the problem is, you know, I'm in public and I don't want to look like a sociopath. The biscuit sandwiches are amazing. You give me chicken, you give me sausage, does not matter. It's the biscuit. Maybe these are well publicized, you know, and everyone thinks they're the best thing already, but like I could not possibly say enough good things about the biscuit sandwiches. Underrated.
I'm going to go with the barbecue. I remember the day when they used to serve barbecue sandwiches that weren't hot. And those were closer to cat food than really eating a sandwich. It was really disappointing. But now that they're hot, it's, you know, you come from the cold north and you come down here and you're itching for some good barbecue. And that now is a great sandwich. And I actually like it if it's been in the warmer for a little bit longer, because then the edges are crispy. Yeah. So good. I mean, I literally can't pass one of those Green Huts without grabbing one. And you guys, you can't see me on the podcast, but I look like I've had a couple barbecue sandwiches.
All right, that'll do it for the preview. And we will be back maybe after, I don't know.
Analyzing Doug Gim's low amateur performance?
Yeah. I don't know. Who's going to be low am?
I'm very curious to see what Neiman does.
I think he's obviously the odds on favorite.
He is number one in the world.
Yeah. You're not going out on a limb.
You two debating the low am is a proper way to end this podcast, you know?
Doug Gim, I don't know if he hits, he's not that long.
Yeah.
Doug Gim's a Chicago product.
Right. Arlington Heights.
Grew up in my backyard, but he's
literally
really
that's
good.
Quite a story. Pitch yeah. a tent. And-
he did. He needed a place to stay, and I said, you can stay under the stars.
I would like to see. Neiman.
What's his home course? Sunset Valley.
Oh, he's out in Arlington Heights. So
is that closer to Mundelein?
No.
I'm losing my Chicago geography.
I don't think he had a home course for a while. I think he. I'm not gonna get into that.
Yeah, I would love to see Neiman do it, just because. I mean, he's Chilean. I can't name the second best Chilean golfer ever, so it would be sweet to see him get low am and have a good pro career after he. You know,
I think Neiman will get it. I'm bummed that Toto Gana isn't in it.
Shout out Toto Gana. Big dreams for that guy last year, and he just got nuked off the course.
All right, guys. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Thanks, Andy.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Fried Egg Podcast. We do the digging for you.